bringing you the latest in tax credit news, insight, and analysis. This is Tax Credit Tuesday. Sitting in today for Michael Novogradic, here's your host, Dirk Wallace.
Hello, I'm Dirk Wallace, and this is Tax Credit Tuesday. I'm your guest host today, and this is the June 25th, 2024 podcast. As our audience on YouTube can see, I'm here today with Carrie McMillan, a principal in Novogradic's Dover, Ohio office. This episode will be the latest installment in Tax Credit Tuesdays, So You Want to Be a Developer series. This series is meant to give insights into the process of developing, financing, and operating affordable rental housing properties from conception to practical reality. Today, Carrie and I will be providing an overview of the important steps in the development process. But before we delve into today's topic, just a few quick scheduling notes for our audience. Some of you may know we were off last week for Juneteenth. We're also going to be off next week for the 4th of July. We plan to return July 9th with the first of a two-part episode about year 15 of a LIHTC property. Now back to today's episode. Our goal with today's episode is to provide a bird's eye view of the process of developing affordable rental housing using low income housing tax credits. In today's episode, first we'll discuss the typical structure for a low income housing tax credit transaction. A structure in this context is a way a development is financed and organized, and Carrie will detail the key stakeholders of the transaction and talk about the nature of a low income housing tax credit program. Next, we'll talk about the stages in the development timeline. This takes place over the course of several years from forming the initial partnership and lining up the team all the way through year 15 of the compliance period. Finally, Carrie and I will share our insights about the transaction process, particularly for developers who are contemplating or just getting started in building low income housing tax credit properties. One final note before Carrie and I talk is that if you're curious to learn more about today's topic, please sign up for Novogradic LIHTC 101, the basics webinar. This is going to take place on Friday, and it's going to feature Carrie and Novogradic Senior Developer of Education, Wayne Michael. There'll be speakers on the webinar, and it's a three-hour webinar, so they're going to get into greater detail than Carrie and I are going to today. But for more information and to register for the webinar, please visit our website at novoco.com. So with that, we have a lot to discuss. So as Mike Novogradic says, if you're ready, let's get started. So Carrie, welcome back to Tax Credit Tuesday.
Thanks, Dirk.
Yeah, it's great to have you back on the podcast. I know this is your second appearance. The first one was, I believe it's February, we were talking about the Green Resilient Restaurant Program, and we were co-guests on that one. So
we were. And this is your first time as a guest host, so congratulations on that.
That's right. Thanks. Yeah, on the other side of the microphone now. So, but I'm sure it'll be just as fun. So as we discussed last time, it was a renewable energy topic, and that paired very nicely with low income housing tax credits. But today's topic is purely about low income housing tax credits. And, you know, but before we really get into that, you know, let's give our listeners maybe some background on services and roles kind of you provide, you know, to low-income housing tax credit participants.
I provide a variety of services in the low-income housing tax credit industry. Outside of the annual audit and tax work, I perform a lot of consulting services, agreed-upon procedures engagements, forecasting engagements. So most of my expertise is in the early stages of development through stabilization.
Okay, great. You know, my day job is an accountant when I'm not co-hosting webinars or podcasts. And but for those of you that may be members of our LIHTC working group, I do host a monthly meeting for LIHTC industry participants called our Novogradic Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Working Group. We do talk about technical issues, legislative issues, and things that may be impacting the industry. So anyone that is interested in low-income housing tax credit working group, feel free to reach out. So yeah, so let's just dive right in. So there are different stages of the development process, and to kind of set that stage, I think it would be helpful for a lot of our listeners to really understand the structure of a transaction. As I said in the intro, when we say structure, we're really talking about who are the participants, who are the key players, the key stakeholders involved. So I guess looking at a loan causing tax credit transaction, getting basic, even all the way down to, are we a partnership? Are we a corporation? What would I expect to be a typical structure of a loan causing tax credit transaction?
Sure. So to have a partnership, number one, you need to have more than one partner. So typically, we're going to, again, keep it basic. So we're going to envision that this partnership owns and operates a property. And this partnership has a general partner and it has a limited partner. Typically, the general partner will be 1%, say, and the limited partner will be 99.99% or 99%. The limited partner provides contributions and money to the partnership in exchange for the tax credits that will be generated at that entity that will flow up through. The general partner is more involved in the day-to-day and managing the partnership. And as a result of that, the partnership will pay to the general partner a fee, such as the partnership management fee. Also, another player in this structure is the developer. Most of the time, the developer and the general partner are affiliates or they're somehow related parties. So another fee that the partnership will pay is to the developer. So I guess keeping it very basic, the structure is you have a partnership that owns and operates the property, and then you have a general partner and a limited partner that then owns the partnership.
Great. Yeah, so that gives us a good sense of what a partnership is and how it operates. We kind of know who the partners are now. You know, I look at kind of the structures being a few kind of two parts, especially with the financing. You have the equity financing, and that's kind of what the partners bring to the table. But in a loan causing tax credit transaction, equity is not going to finance the entire property. And you're going to need other sources of financing. So then you bring in the financing structures. So can you kind of share with our audience what a few of those financing structures and what those sources might be?
Absolutely. So outside of the contributions, equity contributions, and the developer fee, we have that the partnership can obtain grants to help with that funding gap. They can also receive subsidies, such as Section 8. There's also debt financing that can take on many, many different forms that can fill the gap. There is your hard debt financing, such as the mortgage. Then you also have soft loans that will be paid from available cash. But I just want to point out here, too, that we'll get into 4%, 9% deals in a little bit. And again, in the webinar, we talk about this. But the 4% in a 4% tax credit deal, you will typically see lower equity contributions because you're having a bond financing to help fill that funding gap. Whereas in a 9% tax credit deal, you'll see higher equity contributions in those partnerships.
So one of those funding gaps is what we talked about on the last podcast with the GRP funds. So yeah, definitely a lot to learn on kind of the various podcasts that have been done over the years. So this process, it doesn't happen overnight. You have to build a property. You look at an extended use period and you say, wow, from starting day one to the end of what an extended use period might be, you could be looking at 30, 40, 99 years. That's a long, long period. So obviously we don't have enough time to kind of cover all of that today. But if you do want more information on that, you can attend the webinar or watch some other, so you want to be a LIHTC developer podcast where we do dive deeper into that. But the focus today is going to be more on those first 2 years of the development process. So this is where the credits are earned. This is where the magic happens. You have to build the property. You have to kind of do what you are supposed to do to earn the credits. And kind of what does that involve? And I guess, where do you start at?
Sure. So we'll first point out some steps that we feel are important. Again, it's not an exhaustive list, not all inclusive. There's several other tiny steps in between as well. So we'll start by what we talked about just a minute ago, forming a partnership. That's step one. You have to have that partnership. The second step would be to line up a team for a development team. And then you also need, for the property, you will need to have a market study done, a forecast completed for the property. You will need to apply for tax credit. And then once you get all that in order and the project is construction's going, rehabilitation's going, once that finishes up, you will then place in service. The property will place in service. And then there will be a need for a final cost certification. After the final cost certification, there will be a place in service package that must be submitted to the state housing agency. And then Form 8609s will be issued for the property. And then you will have your typical annual audit and tax work done. And then lastly, you'll head into your annual compliance requirement.
Great. Yeah, that's a great overview. And I think for kind of the remainder of the podcast, maybe we focus on maybe kind of those first six items. Don't worry, listeners, you don't have to memorize them. We'll go through them one at a time, but really kind of starting with lining up a team and then getting to Form 8609. You maybe lay out 8, 10, 12 steps, but really the majority of those steps kind of happen very quickly from lining up a team to placing in service. And then from there, you have a pretty long compliance period after that. So kind of looking at step one and lining up a team, I'm a first-time developer. Where do I start? How do I line up a team? Where do I go?
Sure. We are looking for, the development team is made up of contractors, architects, lenders, attorneys, every possible party involved in the whole to get it going. So if you are a developer, you want to surround yourself with knowledgeable other parties. So a contractor, you want to make sure you're getting someone who knows the regulations and the rules for that area. Same with the architect, lenders, and the property management company. You want to make sure that they're familiar with compliance requirements. Attorneys, you want to make sure that they are also knowledgeable in the LIHTC industry. CPAs are part of that development team. So you want to surround yourself with those individuals and companies that are going to help you and provide value to your project. I do want to point out that typically early on, the LIHTC investor, the LIHTC partner may not be in the picture right away. They may come in later when the project is closer to placing in service, but before tax credit delivery starts.
Yeah, and when really looking at forming that team, I know a lot of the qualified allocation plans, which is kind of the state rule book, kind of looking in the application, a lot of times they require certain team members to have certain levels of experience, whether it's especially your property manager, or your accountant, or your attorney, or they might have an approved vendor list. Maybe you can start with that vendor list to say, okay, I don't really know anyone in the industry. Where do I even start? So state agency is a good resource. Really looking at what they're ultimately going to require before you sign that person up. I know one other thing you mentioned was market study. So what is a market study? What does it do?
Market study basically examines the area around where the property is going to be built, just to take a bigger look at what is this community like? How can we make this project thrive? What can we adapt here to help with the growth and the need for filling it with tenants? So what's going to be attractive for those tenants?
Right. Yeah, I always look at it and say, do we need this project? If there's four corners and there's two affordable housing properties, one on two of the corners, you're probably not going to get one on the third. So it's probably going to kind of look at that market. So I know another thing you mentioned is kind of on the list, and I think was a service that you mentioned you provide is a forecast. I know I talked to developers and they maybe just have a source and use forecast, or investors and lenders may have different forecasts. How would you describe a forecast, and what would you recommend kind of typically including in that, in those projections?
Sure. In a nutshell, I would say that CAS is like a roadmap to the property. It's an outlook of the from start to finish, from the development cost all the way through to how it's operating and any cash flow that's going to be available. So I think that it's good to have a sophisticated forecast for the property, because this is kind of like a tool to also gauge interest from investors that you can pull in to the property. So I would say it's very important to have those development costs and your limitations. Like you said, Dirk, there's qualified allocation plans that also set limitations for certain fees that can be incurred. So you want to use this as a tool for that too, to make sure everything aligns with the state and you're following how permanent documents are going to be drafted up. So the forecast will also follow those guidelines as well.
Right. Yeah. I've heard somebody say a forecast is just numbers on paper. And I'm like, a little bit more than that.
Much deeper.
Those numbers are capital accounts and sources and uses and all that fun stuff that everyone's going to need to take a look at. So, all right. So we have here, we have the partnership formed. We have the team lined up. We did our forecast. Now we know how many credits we need. So now it's time to apply for the credits. Again, if I'm a developer, where am I starting? How do I apply? What am I applying for? What's that process look like?
Sure. So to do the tax credit application, you will need to first know if you are going to be applying for the 9% credit or the 4% credit. So there are different pools, I guess you could say, for each of these. And again, they are awarded by the state. So let's just start with 4% since I said state. The 4% deal is they consider it non-competitive. There is, I'll say, like a bigger pool because it varies by state and it's based on the state size. So the state's volume cap of private activity bonds. So you will take the state's population and multiply it by a per capita to get to this total pool of credit. So then when the developer and the partnership apply for the credit, they will, if they are awarded, they will receive a notification that they were awarded this, and then they must now be subject to these different tests along the way to ensure that they can receive these credits. The LIHTC 101 webinar on Friday will go into these tests more. So I'm just going to mention them here because I'm going to throw out some language that may not be familiar to some. There will be a 50% test that must be met. And this is just saying that 50% or more, it's the development aggregate basis. Let's just say cost. They have to be a certain cost, but they must be financed with the bond. And then the 95.5 is that 95% of the bond proceeds must be expended on qualified costs, which again, that's a different term. There's certain costs that qualify and others that are unqualified, that are bad costs. So that is with the 4% credit. And again, these can vary depending on your eligible basis that is calculated. And again, we will not go into that detail here, but it is not a set amount for 4%. For your 9% credit, when you're applying, you would need, like, this is a competitive credit. This credit is limited to the amount that you are awarded by the state. So you will receive a reservation letter for the 9% credit. And similar to the 4%, there is a test that must be met in order to ensure that you receive the credit. It's called a 10% test. And this is simply just incurring 10% of costs within the year allocated. Again, there are certain costs that must be incurred, but so both have these thresholds and both of them require an application for the partnership to go on and apply for in order to receive these credits. There are the questions on the application may be just general about the property And it can also be they want to see a specific plan, the development team, things of that nature, which are all weighted on different levels.
Great. Yeah, it's a great overview between the two different types of credits. I will point out on the taxes and bonds side, we are increasingly seeing more and more competition for those taxes and bonds. There's a map that we've been working with a group of attorneys on that show it's a bond scarcity map, and it kind of shows, okay, well, these states, while normally it's not competitive, some states, they're ramping up competition even for the taxes on bonds. So something to keep in mind that even things without a high level of competition, it seems like there's always competition out there. And also some states, we're talking about everything at the federal level. So Carrie was kind of talking this 4%, 9% of federal credits to offset federal tax liability. I feel like every day I read a news alert that says the state just passed a new state loan compensation tax credit. So that's going to offset state tax liability. So you could have a different investor for federal versus state. I believe the last state was just a couple weeks ago announced was Tennessee. Tennessee just announced the state credit. So many, many states I know were well above 20, well above half at the states. I think we're in the high 20s on state credits. So shockingly, we did another podcast on state credits. So if you want to know more about state credit, there was an episode of So You Want to Be a LIHTC Developer podcast with Aaron Sherrard, where he does talk about state LIHTC. So feel free to check that out. Okay, so let's move a little bit deeper, though, into the development process. So again, now we've put our four guests together, lined everything up. We've built our building. Now we're placing our building in service and starting the lease-up process. Once this happens, you're like, okay, I've got my credits, right? So I guess, how do you officially kind of get those credits? What reports, what process is involved in that?
Sure. If only it were that easy, where places in service and these credits disappear.
Exactly.
So once you're placed in service, a final cost certification will need completed by a CPA firm, an accounting firm. So you will need this audit of cost to determine your eligible basis to receive your credit. It's part of a place in service package that gets submitted to the state housing agency, along with other documents such as loan docs, the certificate of occupancies, architectural agreements, permits, things of that nature that will get reviewed by the state housing agency. These will then come back. The state housing agency will review and then issue Form 8609. So this place in service package is very important to be complete and correct, because the 8609 will be based off of the final cost certification and the other support that is submitted to the housing agency.
Yeah, and most states, I think, are good about having the checklist. I know a lot of people like checklists. What do I need to submit? So there'll be a checklist that kind of walks through that package. And yeah, by then, hopefully you have everything you need. But during the application process, I always say, well, you might want to look at the checklist and for the cost cert, because you're eventually going to have to do that. And if you don't do something on the front end that you need for that, it can slow down that process. So I think we've made to the last of the six we want to talk to here with 8609. So you mentioned Form 8609. There's really no fancy word for it. It's just the number of the form, but it is a very, very important form. So what do our listeners need to know about Form 8609?
Sure. The Form 8609 is the form that certifies the eligibility of the low-income housing tax credit. This form is given for each building. If it's a multi-building project, it is signed. There are two parts to it. Part one is signed by the housing agency, and the second part is signed by the owner. The forms are also generated, like I said, from the cost certification, where you have your eligible basis, if there's a basis boost, things of that nature. Again, on our webinar on Friday, we will be really diving into this form and discussing in more detail all the pieces and parts to it. But again, if there's the Form 8609, there may be multiple. Again, if there's multiple buildings. And also if there's an acquisition rehab instead of just new construction, there will be multiple Form 8609 for each acquisition and rehab piece. So this is a very important form for you to claim the credits and then continue to claim your credits.
I would say have as many people review it as you can. I'd definitely have your accountant review it, have your investor review it. I know the state agency, they fill out the top part, but that second part contains a lot of elections, and you may want to make sure you check the right box, which I'm sure they're going to talk about Friday. So that kind of, I guess, before we bring things to a close here, are there any additional insights that you would tell developers? These are definitely the things that you should know before you go through this process.
Absolutely, I would. You know, with some of my consulting work that I do up front, we stress the planning part, even pre-development. You need to be very organized and plan ahead. So you need to have this vision in your head and try to execute it as early as possible. So whenever you want your development team to be very experienced, you want to pull together a solid team from the beginning. So, and I would say even new to the industry, there are plenty of attorney, CPAs, contractors that are very experienced in the LIHTC world. So try to grab one of those to help get you started. And then I also want to stress that those tests we mentioned, whether it was a 10% test, 95.5, 50%, those are also very important tests to be completed during the construction phase in order for those credits to flow to you. Because you are at risk, the partnership is at risk of possibly losing credits if those thresholds aren't met.
Great. Thanks, Carrie. And I would add for some newcomers that there's a lot of resources as far as booklets and books that have been published on this. I know we have a 101 booklet on our website. There's the LIHTC Bible, and I've heard some people call it, or the LIHTC Handbook, which is pretty thick. We call it the gray book, but I've heard it called the silver book because I guess silver has a little bit of pop to it other than gray, but It's a very thick gray book that kind of gives you everything you need to know. Probably wouldn't recommend just going right to section 42 of the Internal Revenue Code. That might be a little overwhelming, pretty technical, but there's a lot of resources out there that kind of explain what's in that code section. So obviously we mentioned the webinar. I guess as far as resources that you would recommend, Carrie, I mean, any other resources out there that we should touch on?
Yeah, we have ourselves, Dirk, you and me. We're available for questions. Reach out to us. There's also the NOVA conference coming up here at the end of September in New Orleans. I will be there, and I believe Dirk said he may be attending as well. And then, yeah, like you said, the basic webinar, which is a 3-hour webinar on Friday, that we go over some basic stuff in a lot of detail.
Great. Yeah, and I think the last thing I'll mention is the Loan Composing Tax Credit Working Group. Again, feel free to reach out if you'd like to join that. It's a great way to bring issues to kind of the wider community where people may not know it's an issue until it's brought up. So, you know, always looking for new members and kind of new issues that we may not know are out there. Well, thank you, Carrie. I'll include our contact information for both of us in this week's show notes. And before we get to the off-mic section, which I believe we're going to call the off-Dirk section. I don't know if that has a ring to it like off-mic does, but this week, since Mike is out, I would like to remind the audience to subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you prefer, and also to share the podcast with your colleagues who may be interested. Okay, so we reached the... I'll say it again, off-Dirk section, even though I'm not a fan, but so this space kind of has transitioned over the years. We used to kind of ask a few questions of our guests and have our guests answer those questions, but we thought it would be a little interesting just to kind of give a shout out to someone in the tax credit community. That was the topic of this week's episode, kind of they're involved in what we were talking about. It started with my partner, Tony Grapponi, who was on another Tax Credit Tuesday podcast in the Renewable Energy Finance series. So, Carrie, is there someone that you would like to give a shout out to?
I would. I would like to give a shout out to Annie Hamlin. She used to work with the New Jersey Housing and Mortgage Finance Agency, and now she works for Project Freedom, Inc. as the Director of Housing Development there. I have worked with her for several years, as most of my clients are located in New Jersey. So I often go to Annie with questions, as she's pretty knowledgeable on LIHTC-specific questions for New Jersey.
Great. Yeah, I know Annie. We had a few projects that we worked on back when she was at New Jersey HMFA. And yeah, I believe she signed the 8609s, I believe.
Yes, she did. She's a great source. Yes.
Go. Well, I think I might give a shout out here. I think my shout out goes to Mike Novogradic. Now, obviously, he developed a great platform here, successful podcast. I'm glad I could be part of it. So, Mike, shout out to you. Thanks for the opportunity to guest host here, and I hope I did you proud. But before I wrap up, one final reminder is that next week's Tax Credit Tuesday episode, your usual host, Mike Novogradic, will be scheduled to return July 9th. So thank you, Carrie. It was a pleasure to be a guest host on an episode with you. And finally, to our audience, I'm Dirk Wallace. Thanks for listening.